Welcome to the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast. On today's episode, we're getting back into the Australian Classics Book Club for 2020. The Australian Classics Book Club is an exploration of Australian writing, looking back over the forgotten, the controversial, the much discussed and the underappreciated books that make up our Australian letters. In today's book club, I'm joined by Bram Presser. Bram is the author of 2017's The Book of Dirt. He's also written the introduction to today's classic, so together we will be discussing Arnold Zabel's 2001 novel, Café Scheherazade. I'm Andrew Popel, and every week I broadcast Final Draft from the studios of 2SER in Sydney. We record on Gadigal land of the Eora Nation, and I acknowledge the traditional custodians and their ongoing connection to that land, stolen land that was never ceded. Final Draft explores the best of Australia's books, writing and literary culture, and in the Australian Classics Book Club we look back to learn more about that culture and how it influences our reading. On Ackland Street in Melbourne's beachside suburb of St Kilda sits a cafe named Scheherazade. Martin is a journalist there to write a story on the cafe's founders, Avram and Marsha Zelenikov. No sooner has he begun than Martin knows that this will be no Sunday column. As voices fill the air of Scheherazade on a nightly basis, Martin comes to bear witness to the history that has seen so many flee their homes in Europe and converge on Melbourne for a new beginning and a chance to heal. Join me as we explore the power of storytelling in Café Scheherazade. My name is Andrew Popel, and if you are a calendar watcher, you know that at the end of the month, it is time for the Australian Classics Book Club. It is a chance to look back across the many amazing works of Australian writing and discover something, perhaps something that you didn't know, something that you do know that you want to find out more about. Today, I'm joined on the line by Bram Presser. Wikipedia calls Bram a Melbourne personality. On his own page, he's a scruffy scrivener. But perhaps regular listeners know Bram best as the author of 2017's The Book of Dirt, the cross-generational story of Bram's grandparents and his search to uncover their story. Now, Bram has written the introduction to today's inclusion in the Australian Classics Book Club. It is Arnold Zabel's Café Scheherazade. Bram, welcome. Thanks so much. It's great to be chatting to you again, just in general. But
thanks for having me back.
And this book, I'm very excited to be discussing this and sharing it with people.
Yeah, it's a masterpiece. It's just a beautiful, beautiful book.
Now, today it's one of the youngest of the classics that we've actually discussed in the book club. And its author is still, you know, a vital writer that many people may know. But perhaps could you just give us an introduction to Arnold Zabel for those who don't know who he is, don't know about his work?
Look, Arnold is got to be one of those people that it's almost impossible to come up with, you know, some sort of description that's going to do him justice. He is so many things. I think of him as Australia's kind of greatest fabulist, almost kind of a moral compass for the, you know, the literary world, and also just generally for Australian society. He's a teacher. He's a tireless advocate for human rights, for writing, for all the things that I think we as you know, Australians in general should be aspiring to. I'm not sure how many people know he was the person who championed and brought to publication Behrouz Bashani's No Friend But the Mountain. He was the president of Pen Australia. He is just an incredible person and also an incredible writer, and he's just every time he publishes a new book, it's kind of a new revelation and a new it just opens your mind to where kind of Australia is at, you know, this time. I can't speak highly enough of him, really.
And today we're going to take a trip across the 20th century, starting back in the mid-90s in Arnold's 2001 novel, Café Scheherazade. Now, until 2008, on Ackland Street in Melbourne's beachside suburb of St Kilda, sat a cafe named Scheherazade. The cafe had held a vital place for Melbourne's Jewish community ever since its founding by Avram and Marsha Zelenikov. Arnold Zabel's Café Scheherazade chronicles the voices and the stories that filled the air of Scheherazade on a nightly basis, bearing witness to the history that had seen so many flee their homes in Europe and converge on Melbourne for a new beginning and a chance to heal. Now, Bram, place and identity are integral to Café Scheherazade, and I wanted to help the listener get a sense of this place that occupied such a place in the hearts of so many people for 50 years. Can you tell me about the Scheherazade of your memory?
Oh, look, so I currently live around the corner from where it was, but I grew up across town from it. But I used to go there with my grandparents, and this, you have to imagine, this was a slice of, you know, Middle Europe in Bayside, Melbourne. You know, you would go in there, it was always lively, full of, you know, firstly, I had a very, very big Holocaust survivor clientele. You know, people would come and they would be able to relive their childhoods almost, you know, eat the things that their mothers cooked, that, you know, go to the, it was like a cafe that they would have gone to before the war. It was just, you know, it was also like a hub for very much the St. Kilda. So I don't know the best way to describe the kind of that kind of boho, slightly misfit, I guess it catered I'm a bit loath to use the term, but like, you know, outcasts from around the city. You know, had a lot of artists, had a lot of, St Kilda's the red light district of Melbourne. It used to have a lot of prostitutes would come and be eating there, and it was this incredible like crucible of Melbourne culture. The post-war era. And also, the food was amazing. You know, like it was all of the things that I remember my grandmother cooking. I'm of Czech heritage. It was probably a bit more kind of Polish and Hungarian. But even so, like my grandparents would take me when my grandmother like couldn't be cooking that night, and we just have these amazing meals and, you know, schnitzels the size of literally the size of the plates, you know, amazing like goulashes and, you know, that European mushroom soup, your blintzes. It was, I'm sitting here, I'm thinking, gee, I miss it now. it was fantastic. And, you know, I actually sort of wish it was still around because, you know, my grandparents have since died. I don't have easy access to that food, and I could now go back there and enjoy what I remember from my childhood. And so, you know, I suppose kind of oddly the book brought me back, and like to be able to have done the intro to this book really actually brought me back to my time with my grandparents, and also this incredible place with these incredible people, that, you know, Avram and Masha. Obviously, there was also, I can't remember her name, but there was this one waitress who everyone knew, and she pretty much ran the place like she was this just incredible kind of maitre d', but in that really, you know, tough Eastern European way. It was just fantastic.
I can hear you so almost drooling down the line.
I'm actually literally drooling. That's embarrassing part.
So, I mean, before you drool all over your phone and we lose the line, I think we have to acknowledge that this sounds amazing, and it sounds also like a tumult of voices. And in the book, it's the crowd outside on the streets referred to as the Jewish Parliament. And yet, out of this, Arnold has extracted a select voices and crafted this novel. And look, we're in a really unique position, Bram. And I think maybe we're going to do something very unique in the Australian Classics Book Club. Should we bring in a special guest to join us and discuss the book?
If that special guest has the initials AZ, well, I'm a resounding yes.
A to Z, it's really A to Z actually kind of describes the book. But let's bring in a special guest.
All right.
So joining us on the line is Arnold Zabel, the author of Café Scheherazade. Arnold, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us in the Australian Classics Book Club.
Oh, it's great to be here.
What does that mean to you? Your book is being brought out in the Text Classics range, and I'm bringing you on a show that I've called the Australian Classics Book Club. Do you have a sense of what your literary output and Café Scheherazade means in terms of it being a classic? Is this something that is meaningful to you at the moment?
Well, it's actually hard to really put my finger on this. It's wonderful to be to have a work, a novel that's regarded as a classic, and all of this in my own lifetime. So I guess that's but it's strange at the same time. I guess you just do your work and you create a body of work, and somehow one of those books becomes a classic and is elevated, I guess, into the canon of Australian literature, one could say. So, yeah, it's very hard to really answer that question, except to say that I'm very grateful.
I was transfixed by Café Scheherazade, and I think one thing that really grabbed me was your storytelling. And this is a book that begins and ends and is filled with storytelling. And I was interested most because I felt myself moving with Martin, your ostensibly your frame storyteller. He's the person who's gone to Scheherazade to create a piece for the paper that turns into this enormous project. And he says, "I return the next night as if lured by a recurring dream."
So look, I mean, for me, I think you absolutely nailed it in terms of Arnold as a storyteller. Like, I mean, he's collected these stories, so he's got the ear of a journalist, which I, you know, the training, but he actually has like the heart and the soul and the pen of like a really classic storyteller. Like, and I mean that in like the literal sense of, like, when I say a classic storyteller, like, you know, these are he has that, or he embodies that mode of storytelling that has been passed down through centuries, and it just, you know, you either have it or you don't, and it's just, it's so natural for Arnold, and so it's the way he writes, the way he tells a story, it's just so it's so moving, and it's so like it just completely captivates you, and it elevates whatever story he's telling.
Arnold, I thought about Martin's captivation, and then I also kind of contrasted that with Lazare, who a refrain through his storytelling was, "I cannot see the continuity, only broken lines." Was that something about your role and Martin's role to bring those stories together?
Well, look, I guess the challenge in every book, every story you write is, how do you construct it, and who is the narrator? And so, Martin Davis became the narrator, and I deliberately chose that name Martin Davis because it could be both a Jewish name and could be a non-Jewish name. So the journalist, he's a journalist, and you could interpret it either way. You know, when it was made into a play, the playwright chose to have Martin Davis as non-Jewish. And so I liked it. I liked the fact that it could go either way. And that, so Martin becomes the conduit through which the stories are told. He's the witness to those stories. I mean, there are moments when he's affected by them and hints at the fact that he is deeply affected by them. But most of the time, he's the listener. When we come to that issue of Lazare Bialat, and his signature refrain, you know, most of my characters in this novel have got a signature refrain to distinguish them. Charles Dickens was a master of the signature refrain, something particular to a character that marked them. And so Lazare is marked by the fact that he's in awe of his own life. He's in awe of the fact that it seems to be just all these fragments. He's trying desperately to fill in the dots. He's trying to integrate those stories into a wholeness. So that's what's specific to him as a character, and that was the challenge with all the characters. That what was in a way they represent different types of survival and different responses to the same trauma. I think that on another level, though, they're all telling stories that kind of fragmented, and so the cafe itself then becomes the place where the stories are told. The cafe also, like Martin Davis as the listener witness, the cafe itself becomes a kind of, I guess, a kind of witness and a way to bring all these fragments together.
I think this is something that I expect any serious listener has asked themselves, and I was really interested in the way you said the cafe becomes a witness there, Arnold, because within the text is Martin's story. We learn very little about Martin. He is, in a way, he is a cipher through which the other stories are told, but he also feels compelled to listen. And of course, a story isn't a story without a listener. Can you both reflect on your roles as listeners to stories and how that's influenced your storytelling and the way you approach a story?
Look, I mean, I think you know, as writers and storytellers, you always have to be a listener first and an observer. And I think what's beautiful, and I say this sort of in the introduction to Café Scheherazade, because I think Arnold, and this is not limited to Café Scheherazade, in you know, most of his work, really just he gets it right, because I think it's very easy to twist or appropriate or somehow not do a story justice, even if you think you are. And so, I think the key is at the very beginning, is to make sure you are, you know, giving the appropriate, you know, attention and care to the listening, and recognize, particularly if you're telling other people's stories, recognizing that though they may transform into kind of your story in a way, ultimately they're not. And there's a degree of, like, just, you know, just basic, I suppose, respect and honor of the stories themselves and the people telling them, to elevate them rather than to elevate yourself. And I think that's, you know, something that certainly for me was very important in writing the Book of Dirt, because there were so many other people's stories told. But it's something that I'm very open about this, that it's something that I think I learned a great deal just from reading Arnold and from getting to know and speaking with Arnold, because I cannot think of a better practitioner of the art of listening and making stories from what you hear than him.
Well, what I'd add to that is, it's not only the story, but it's the way it's told, mm-hmm. and where it's told, and how it is told, and you know, when I say how it is told, it's not only the words and the signature refrains and the sort of expressions that mark a particular character. It's also the gestures. I think gestures are often overlooked as part of the art of story and telling stories. And so you're observing all the time. I know that when I'm in that space where I'm listening to a story, I don't call it research, and I don't use the word interview. It's a conversation, an engagement in a specific place with a specific person, and if you get into that state, the conversational state on the one hand and the witness state on the other, then the magic begins to happen. And when I say magic, people begin to touch on what Primo Levi calls the eloquent episode. They remember things that are, you know, that are a truly shortcuts to deep understanding of a particular time and place. For instance, that story of Laser going to work through the Siberian snows one morning, and he sees what appears to be at sunrise a village suspended from the sky, and then a moment later, he realizes that it was an illusion that the created by the fact that there was smoke coming up from the chimneys of a village, you know, or going up vertically because there's no wind, and it created for a moment an illusion that it was being, or it was suspended between the snow and the sky. So, but it takes a lot of conversations before you get to that type of remembrance in the person that's telling the story. I call this going on full alert, you know, being not only the listening, but the watching and seeing what's going on at the periphery, and also seeing what's whirling around beyond the periphery. So there's always the scene in the cafe, there's always other things happening at the same time.
Can I just add, like, in terms of the place itself, Café Scheherazade and Arnold said, like, the place itself is important. Like, people would be able, survivors often wouldn't tell their stories, right? But Café Scheherazade gave them a place where they could open up in an environment that they wouldn't otherwise talk as well. That's certainly the feeling I got, from reading the book, but also from my experience of having been there. It was what in modern times we would call a safe space, where I don't think had Arnold encountered these people in other environments, they would necessarily have been so willing or even able actually to tell their stories.
Well, look, it's interesting there because this is a novel. And it's a novel for all kinds of reasons. And one of the reasons it's a novel is because quite a few of those stories were not told in the cafe. And so, the cafe at a certain point becomes, well, it just becomes the place. So it's a kind of fiction that some of those stories were heard there. And, stories that I heard in the living rooms of people's places or that I've heard elsewhere. So looking at this issue of the fiction, the word fiction itself comes from the word fictio in Latin, which means to make or to shape. And so really what we're dealing with here is how I shape the story. And certainly, that the cafe was the inspiration for the novel, and certainly quite a few of the stories were literally told there, some more than others, the cafe is there for many other reasons, and the things that were swirling around the cafe, like the Jewish Parliament that met every Sunday morning and argued about the world events, that actually was happening too. So there's a lot of stuff that was happening around the cafe. But on the other hand, I was drawing on all kinds of things in order to shape this novel and make it work. And the cafe became central to the storytelling. And not only that, I think one of those moments, and Bram would understand this, you struggle, you go through periods when it's not quite happening, and then there are moments of great excitement. And one great moment of excitement is when I cottoned on to the idea that I had to find an equivalent, a mirror cafe to Scheherazade in Eastern Europe. And after doing the research, I heard about Wolfkas, where Avrom Zelaznikov, one of the lead characters, had actually spent time in Vilna. And you get excited. And these are things that fiction enable you to do, to make those sort of connections, and perhaps that way tell a deeper truth or create a more engaging magical narrative.
We're living in a world right now where So much is happening in terms of movement of peoples across borders because of turmoil. They're escaping persecution. And we have a government that works so hard to keep these stories silent. And that is no more apparent than when one of those stories gets through and you have a book like Behrouz Behçani's No Friend But the Mountains showing us the power of testimony about the impact on asylum seekers on Manus Island. Can you talk to me a little bit, Arnold, about storytelling as survival and the role that it plays in keeping people alive and helping them, you know, be reconciled with the past?
Look, well, Behrouz is interesting because I've known Behrouz since 2014. We've conducted a dialogue. We formed a deep friendship through various means. And as he was writing that novel, I was getting the chapters. And I think it's interesting with reflecting on my relationship with Behrouz. You know, I've come to see we're kindred spirits, and when I say that, we're both driven to bear witness. You know, we're both driven to record the stories of those that are, one could say, stateless or in limbo, or in Café Scheherazade, I call them Luftmenschen, you know, people that no longer can feel the ground beneath their feet. And these are stories of people who could so easily be overlooked, and so not only overlooked but treated very brutally. I just, in my view, there's few things more brutal than being in limbo and not knowing where you're going. You know, spending years of the best years of your life with your life in a sense on hold. So, the impulse is to respond to that and then to write the story, but to write it well. I mean, you've got to write it engagingly. It's part of the project. It's an obligation. And if you don't do it well, you're betraying those stories. So, it comes down to this issue of betrayal, I think. There's a wonderful saying, I think it was Elie Wiesel who said it, that there are stories meant to be told, and not to tell them is to betray them. So that becomes the mission, and that is to bear witness to the stories and then to tell them well and engagingly. And Behrouz, of course, found a way to do that. It's quite extraordinary what he does in that book of his, which is as much novel, I think, again, as it is a work of nonfiction.
It's an extraordinary story, and I mean, until Bram reminded me earlier in the conversation, I'd forgotten your role in it. But it jumped out at me that there is a kinship between the stories that we hear in Café Scheherazade and Behrouz's, but also in the way we engage. I think in books like these, there's so much importance in the way the reader engages and choosing to engage and to hear, to bear witness.
Look, what you said is very interesting, this issue of the reader, and I know Bram would be acutely aware of this. You know, when you're sitting at the writing desk or in the cafes where I tend to write or wherever we write, I don't have the audience in mind. You know, what's in mind is, I've just got to tell the story as powerfully as possible. That's the impulse. Do you feel the same, Bram, that impulse? You can get into trouble if you are too conscious of it can lead to you being crippled by a kind of inner critic. And I'll say this too, what's interesting about No Friend But the Mountain, Behrouz's book, is he was uncompromising. You know, when we're looking at various chapters of his book, I mean, he's weaving in poetry. He's weaving in, it's a very unorthodox book. You know, there are moments when he just lets his feelings fly, and it becomes a chant and a cry and And then there are moments when it becomes a Kafkaesque nightmare. But he's very, very empowering because he backs his own. And in the end, it proved to be was not a great judge. He stuck to his guns, and the rest is history in a sense. It's become a bestseller and a very powerful book and emblematic of a time and predicament that will survive the test of time.
Yeah, I think you do. You have to be absolutely true to the story you're telling and what you're writing. I think if you have an audience in mind and you write to that, there's every chance that you'll get it wrong. Well, like get it wrong, and that audience won't necessarily. Readers are very fickle. They can see, and also they're very sharp. They can see through. Like, the artifice of being written for rather than, having a story that's told, that's true to itself. And that, that's what people want to read, I think. And that's, that's where the power lies in telling the story as it needs to be told. It's not even asked to be told. It needs to be told. And if you can't, if that involves, using, as Bayrouz did, bits of poetry or various other modes or forms or what have you, then so be it. And if it is true to the story being told, it will feel natural in it. If you force something in, that'll also kind of stand out in all the wrong ways. In Book of Dirt, I had a few bits of poetry in it. I just remember my editor, like when we were going through the manuscript, she just looks at me, she goes, "You're not a poet." And we crossed them out. and she was right, looking back, I felt at the time, I think, but it was it was actually like a departure from what the story needed to be told.
Going back to the writing of Cafe Scheherazade, that book is written in a kind of Yiddish syntax, right? And it's a very Jewish storyteller's mode. There's other books I've written, like Sea of Many Returns, which is set in the island of Ithaca, and a good deal of it where my wife's family comes from. And all the characters, many of the characters are Greek. It was very, very different kind of a challenge. And one of the joys of writing Cafe Scheherazade was to allow that voice, that Yiddish storytelling voice, which I think was in my mother's milk, one could say, to allow that voice to manifest. And there, and I know Bayrouz is an exemplar of this, but there the challenge is to hold your nerve. You've got to hold your nerve. You've got to back yourself. You can't say, "Oh, well, look, who's going to go for this sort of voice?" I actually was quite moved as well as surprised by the response to Cafe Scheherazade, and I know Bayrouz was overwhelmed by the response to it, but he held his nerve and he stuck to his guns. And I'm telling you, there are people, there were people that were telling him otherwise, but he just followed his own star. Another parallel there is that we're both drawing on, part of what we're drawing on is our specific cultures for storytellers. Mm-hmm. And he draws a lot on the Kurdish and Iranian storytelling traditions, which are very poetic, this is all part of it. Believing in yourself, even though you're doubting, if I can put it that way.
I wonder if you can reflect on that storytelling tradition, because what struck me as you were making those comments about the writing process and not trying to be too self-conscious of a reader is the dynamic between Masha and Avram as they're telling the story in Cafe Scheherazade It's almost like Masha is Avran's kind of online editor, and she'll break in and she'll say, "No, you've jumped too far ahead. You have to come back." She's there to remind him that there is an audience, that if you want Martin to understand this story, you have to tell it in a certain way, which is, I suppose, a beautiful dynamic of dialogue. But it was also just a sort of a lovely contrast to the way you describe the solitary writer at the desk.
Well, look, you know, it's a very interesting point you've made. And once again, here we enter the realm of what fiction can do. Mm. So what that is that I picked up on this. I mean, Marcia would occasionally do this, right? And so then that becomes, part of the... it's woven in as part of the way they interact. You see, it's interesting because Avram and Marcia are the two characters whose names are remain as they are as they are. But even there is a kind of fiction, meaning the way I've shaped what I've picked up from them, becomes the way they interact in the novel. In real life, there were moments they interacted like that. So it's a fascinating parallel there. I mean, I've got people that say to me, "Oh, this is not a novel; it's a true story." And then I'll read the passages, right, which I've made up entirely. There's one passage, right? It's two paragraphs, and I'll read it to you. And it's a wonderful example of this. And when people read these two paragraphs, right, They say to me, "Oh, I've heard that guy say that, right?" And this is the paragraph. "Yossel sinks his teeth into the schnitzel. Scheherazade is a schnitzel gun maiden, he says, a schnitzel paradise. It has the best in every variety. My favorite is a chicken. But if you wish, you can have a veal schnitzel, a Parisian schnitzel, a Wiener schnitzel. You can order your own, the way you once had it, over there, homemade in the Alte Welt." He pauses for another ample bite. "And they are honest schnitzels, saturated with oil, swimming in juice, with big portions and no skimping. Look how it fills the whole plate. It even sticks out over the side. My dear Martin, one thing I know, when there is food, don't be shy. Who knows if you will ever enjoy another meal? Here, have a bite. I'm a vegetarian, I say. You're a fool," he replies. And so it goes. But the way I wrote that is that one day I walked in, looked at the menu of Scheherazade, and there were schnitzels all over the place. And then I heard Jocelyn's voice, which I already established, and out came that passage. So that's it. That's the process. I'm sure that a lot of writers of fiction, whether the characters are based on someone they know or an impression of someone, or whether it's so-called made up. You've got to get into the voice. And once you get into the voice, it really starts happening.
I'm so glad you brought up that passage, Arnold, because I did want to ask you about it. It for me evoked the moment of sitting and being apart. I felt like I was sitting in the cafe, but it also gave me a tinge of what I might have felt, because I'm vegetarian, and I wondered, are you vegetarian? Were you ever in that situation, or was it just important that Martin was in that moment?
Well, look, I've been both. I am vegetarian and have been for quite a while, but there's a deeper point there, that these guys have what, at least the two of the five main characters, Laser and Yossel, have got what Prima Levi calls feral vitality, right? They're not victims. And yes, they're survivors, but they're more than that. We didn't survive, for nothing. We survived, and now we're enjoying life. And they are belligerent. They are at times even aggressive. And both of the characters, who are based on a number of people, are based on people who, I mean, the image that comes to mind is the way they tuck into their food and the way they love their meat. Whether I'm vegetarian or not, I've got to honour the fact that that's the way it is for them. And yes, the real people on which they're based, you know, they in real life have come at me and said, you know, you're just eating grass. You know, what's the point if you reduce to eating grass? We're here for more than that. And that goes to the heart of something that was very deliberate from the beginning of writing this Cafe Shares art, is that if you grow up with these people, you're growing up with real life, sometimes larger than life characters who are agents of their own life and who are far from being victims, people who embrace life and engage with life. So yeah, it's a book about survivors, but more than that, a book about a kind of celebration of life once you come through the storm.
I think that's also, you know, what really resonates with me, and I would say with, you know, lots of, well, not most of the Jewish community at the very least Australia and certainly I would say beyond, is just this idea that, like, reading it, I felt like I was with my grandparents and their friends, and it was rendered in, because I mean, this is the way Arnold you know, writes it. It really is. You could not get a better snapshot of a community at a particular time in a particular place than Cafe Scheherazade, and it's also told in this tradition of Yiddish storytelling, which is what we were brought up in. So to me, it's like I read this book and I feel like I'm just in this, you know, place of home. You know, it's beautiful, kind of, you know, warm home where you know, people have survived. They've moved beyond survival. They're kind of relishing life. They've gotten another chance at life, and they're really just in this incredible way, you know, grasping life after having experienced the most unimaginable trauma. And it's this incredible feeling as a reader, and particularly as a reader whose family it essentially represents, you know, to be able to go back to that. And now, you know, many years later, and this is why this book endures, many years later, after so many of that generation have now died, we can go back and we can still be with them and feel that same feeling we had, you know, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, because they're so alive in a really authentic way in the pages of this book.
This feels like a really lovely place to draw our conversation together. And I'm just going to reintroduce both Arnold Zabel. He is the author of Cafe Scheherazade. We have been discussing that book as part of the Australian Classics Book Club, joined by Bram Presser. He is the author of The Book of Dirt. It has been a wonderful discussion. I thank you both so much. And I think we have covered so many areas for people to go back and rediscover and, you know, why this book is such a classic. Arnold, Bram, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
You know, I wanted to add one thing here, and that is that Bram's introduction to the classic edition of Cafe Scheherazade is truly wonderful. And what I love about it most is that he's captured the tone, he's reflecting the tone of the book. And I can't think of a better way of that book being introduced. It goes back to that central point, that one of the central points we've been making, and that is it's not only the story but the way it's told. And in Bram's case, it's not only the introduction but the way he's told it. He's totally and utterly tuned into the spirit of what the project was about. And so I'm very grateful for that. And I feel honoured by that.
Oh, so look, I'm just going to say, like, in the mutual admiration moment, that no, I mean, look, for me, just being asked to write about a book that is, like, so important to me was an incredible honour. It was a beautiful experience, actually, reading it so closely for the purposes of introducing it and just to allow myself to just be immersed again in this incredible book. So, I mean, it was just a fantastic experience. And, you know, I'm really proud of how this edition has come out, you know, as a whole.
I found both the novel, Arnold, and your introduction, Bram, had me tossing down my pages and taking these deep breaths and biting back tears, which is no way to travel Sydney trains. but I know something special is happening when I find that happening. And look, to have the opportunity to discuss it with you both has been just amazing. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you.
That's it for this great conversation in the Australian Classics Book Club. I want to thank Bram Presser and Arnold Zabel for joining me to discuss Arnold's classic novel, Café Scheherazade. Great Conversations is recorded on Gadigal land of the Eora Nation at 2SER's Broadway Studios in Sydney, Australia, and the show is produced and presented by Andrew Popel. To keep up with the latest in books, writing and literary culture, follow us on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. Just look for @FinalDraft2SER and click subscribe in your podcast app to get a new Great Conversation every week. My name is Andrew Popel. I'll be back next week with more books on Great Conversations from Final Draft. Till then, happy reading.